Hey everyone, welcome back to Buzzworthy. I'm your host, Schleicy Harris. I dive into the rare stories entrepreneurs tell about building their businesses, but most importantly, themselves. Let's get into it. Hey everyone, welcome back to our podcast, Buzzworthy. I'm your host, Schleicy Harris. And if you are coming in from our TV show, welcome, special welcome to you for watching our show on Cable 14 and cable14.com. We are going to dive into Leanna Genovese's story about building her company, Imaginable Solutions, with her first product, Guided Hand. I am so thrilled to have you here to continue this conversation that we started, but this is really going to be about you. because, you know, there's no great entrepreneur that has built a business without building themselves.
Yep.
And this podcast is really about building two things at once, which is you and your business. And you have to build you in order to do the hard things that your business demands of
Absolutely.
You. So let's dive into it. What do you think set you up to be an entrepreneur?
So I come from a big, loving Italian family, and the two things that I was taught was to work really hard, extremely hard in everything that you did, and to have empathy mm-hmm. towards others. And the hard working and the empathy part, you know, whether it was helping my grandfather in the garden with his tomatoes or helping make wine.
So Italian.
yeah, pretty much. And you know, helping others and being a hard worker. My mother taught me how to empathize with others and how to show compassion. And those two values and beliefs that I had deep inside me naturally came out when I became an entrepreneur. And I truly have led with my heart and have been so hardworking over the last 6 years that it has naturally set me up for the success of our company and the impacts that we've made.
Yeah. I love that you took it in that direction, because, you know, people think to be an entrepreneur, you have to go and get your business degree, then your MBA, and learn how to do this. And like, somebody's going to have to teach me how to do this mm-hmm. other thing, right? That all these other people haven't, but you took it from such a different direction. It really is about heart and it is about caring.
Yeah.
Do you think that an entrepreneur can be an entrepreneur if they don't have heart?
Oh, that's a good question. It depends what business you're creating. For us, we're in the disability space. So if you're an entrepreneur who didn't have heart, I don't think it would go very well, or you would make decisions that would not impact the disability community and really serve them and help them. But, oh gosh, you got me stumped. That's a great question. I think, yeah, in the disability community, you have to have heart. And the thing is that if you're not inspired by the people that you're serving and you're helping, those challenges and those obstacles that get in your way, if you don't have the heart or the passion
to keep you going,
then I don't know if you can.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think you can be an entrepreneur if you don't have heart, because whether you're in the disability community or, you know, you're building a cleaning business, you've got to like love serving in some capacity, because if you have a customer, you are serving.
Yep.
You are in the service business of some capacity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I really love that, you know, you took it back to the garden with your with your grandfather, because those things build character, so much character. And you sitting across from me here, such a rich character.
Thank you.
But caring's a really important thing for you. And how did you take that from, you know, helping your grandfather in the garden to the inception of Imaginable Solutions?
So it started when I met Alyssa, a woman with cerebral palsy, when I was studying biomedical engineering, and when she had told our class at the time that she loved painting but couldn't hold a paintbrush, that empathy part of me was just on fire, and I wanted to create her something to make her life better. Again, she loved painting but couldn't hold a paintbrush, and she couldn't express herself or be creative. So I knew I had to do something, and I'm pretty hardworking, so I wasn't gonna let anything get in my way, and I was going to find a solution for her, and I did that in my first year.
How do you think, you know, Alyssa being the first person with a disability that you had met, how do you see the world differently now that you had met her?
It's an able-bodied world, and I always say that the world wasn't created for people with disabilities, and there's a lot of disability innovation that needs to be created. And there's so many things that people take for granted. People take their hand mobility for granted.
Yeah.
Being able to do the buttons on their shirt, being able to write a letter or to text, those are all things that people with disabilities, people with cerebral palsy or Huntington's disease, they might not be able to do at all. So it really just changed the way I saw everything. And I just knew that I had to do something to help these individuals.
Yeah. And one of the things that stand out to me in your story is that you were just doing this as like a school project. Biomedical engineering. What is that? Tell me, because I don't know. I'm just a business student.
I mean, it's really solving a problem and solving a human problem. So when you're solving a human problem, really involving the end user, it could be a person with a disability, really involving them in that design thinking process. So design thinking process is actually the first step is to empathize with an individual. So that was my first step naturally with Alyssa. I empathize with her inability to do what she loves. And the second step is to ideate, then prototype, then test, and then you go through the whole process again. And it's really creating a solution to a problem and really focusing on that problem. One of my favorite quotes by Albert Einstein, I'm not going to quote it specifically, but he says, if I was tasked to create a solution for our problem, if I was given 100 minutes, I would spend 99 minutes focusing on the problem and 1 minute focusing on the solution. Mm-hmm. And that really just goes to show that for any engineering student, what you learn is focus on the problem, define the problem, because if you define it well enough, then your solution is so clear.
Yeah.
So that was definitely one of the things that I focused on with Alyssa, and I incorporated her throughout every step of the design process and had her voice be heard in all of the different prototypes and iterations so that my invention was something that could truly help her and meet her needs.
Yeah. And I actually had not heard that quote before from Albert Einstein. So I love a good quote. I quote things all the time. But I never remember the sources. But that's a phenomenal quote, because the more you know about the problem, the more narrow the solution actually becomes. Yeah. And you start to weed out all of these extra things that might just be fluff here, fluff here, fluff here.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that with your particular story, I think what inspires me so much about it is how you really actually took that into action and really started from like the scrappiest version of what your product looked like. If you did watch a TV show, you would have actually seen Leanna's first prototype, which was made out of cardboard. Tell us about.
Oh my goodness. The first prototype of God at Hands was made out of pipe cleaner, straws, and a sponge. In my design engineering class, we had a full cabinet of all of these different materials. And when I created the prototype for Alyssa, I just looked at this cabinet and just started pulling from it and started putting things together. And I created the first prototype. And as silly as it sounds, I had her use that prototype. And then again, I iterated, used chopsticks and then a paint roller as a wrist support and just kept going. And then I integrated 3D printing into the design, which really opened up the scope of the design and the ergonomics and all of that. Yeah. But yeah, I did start a little bit scrappy and, you know, when you're designing, it's so hard to get your design ideas and thoughts from your head onto paper or into something tangible, and especially to share your ideas with a team or people around you. Yeah. So prototyping is so critical to the design process. And as scrappy as it may be, you know, each one tells a different story and puts you in a different direction mm-hmm. in terms of the next iteration to get you closer to that final product.
Yeah. Were you scared to put something like that in front of her? I mean, like, Alyssa, here's my makeshift, you know,
she is
cardboard
such,
and straw.
She is such a kind woman. And actually, for our 6-year anniversary, we reconnected with her and we were able to celebrate the impacts that we made and thanked her formally for being that inspiration that started that ignited this journey. Mm-hmm. But no, she's a lovely woman and she was just so grateful that we were creating something to help her. So I wasn't embarrassed to show her that. And, you know, when I kept making different iterations and prototypes, I made a really big one and the only bag that it could fit in was a garbage bag, and I would take the device in a garbage bag and I would take the HSR across Hamilton and I would go and test it, and I did the grand reveal of taking off that garbage bag and introduce it to healthcare professionals and pretty reputable organizations. Mm-hmm. There I was a little bit nervous there but then once they saw the concept and they loved it and the feedback was amazing. So that only fueled me to continue to go back into the design process and continue.
What do you think made these professionals listen to you and take time with you to show them your prototypes?
When I met with these health professionals, they really felt my passion that I had towards solving this problem. Mm-hmm. And it is a huge problem. Limited hand mobility is a global problem affecting 58 million people. And, you know, when you present a health professional with a product like God at Hands, it's truly a no-brainer for them to adopt it, to help be a part of that innovation process, because it's a technology that can directly impact their patients in the rehabilitation, in the classroom. And so these individuals, it was just a no-brainer for them to have meetings with me and to answer all the questions that I had about the problem and get feedback from them. You know, health professionals, they're also great at empathizing. And I think they also just shared the same mission and compassion towards their own clients and patients.
So would you just pick up the phone and call them and say...
I did. I just made cold calls. I'd say, hi, I'm Leanna. I'm a McMaster student. I created a prototype device to help people with limited hand mobility to write, draw, and paint. And I really think that this could help the individuals that you're serving. So I'd love to come down and show it to you. And I would go down and show it to them. Like, it was that easy. Just picking up the phone and just saying to them, I think this could impact the people that you serve. And it's kind of a no-brainer to help these individuals.
I love that you think that was so easy. Because cold calling
I didn't even know it was called cold calling until 2 years into my business, taking a business night class workshop and then being like, oh, it's called cold calling. Yeah. But it just naturally came to me that, like, I need to call this children's hospital. I need to tell them about my product. They need to know about it. And they probably have people that can benefit from it, that can test it and give me feedback. So I'm just going to pick up the phone and do it.
And you shot your shot.
Yeah, I did.
That is a skill that, you know, so many people don't have, and they're so afraid of the no that's going to come on the other side of it. Were you clearly you weren't afraid of that no because you just did it. But when you did get a no, like, how did you handle that?
I just kept going. I just, you know, laser focused on where I wanted to go. And I just picked up the phone and called the next person on my list. And when you hear a lot of the yeses, and when you hear the kind words of, oh my goodness, someone finally created this device. I've never seen anything like this before. Hearing that definitely fuels you through those no's as well.
Yeah. So you just got to keep plugging through.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think there's a little bit of magic in being really young and just like having this, you know, open view of the world. And it's like, I can do this and I'm gonna do this.
I guess having, for me, when I started the company at 19, I didn't have any business background. I'm an engineer. And I just, honestly, it was good that I was a little bit naive starting this company at 19, because I didn't really know what starting a business was going to be like. All I knew was that I wanted to help people with guided hands and just get it into as many hands as possible. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really know the journey that I was going to be taking. We don't have a lot of entrepreneurs in the family. So I just kept persevering and kept focusing on my why and to make this world more accessible and to get our product into the hands of as many people as possible. And just, yeah, let that push me through anything that came in my way.
Yeah. And you did this all through university.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. With a full, you know,
7 engineering courses. It was crazy. And I would leave during my lectures because I would make those cold calls. Sometimes I would leave messages. And then I would bring my prototype with me to every lecture. And, you know, I would get a phone call during my mechanical vibrations lecture. And it would be a call back from the hospital and they'd say, Leanna, we have a little girl with cerebral palsy who can benefit from your device. Why don't you come down and try it with her? And I would leave in the middle of my lecture and run out that door, jump on a bus and go to the hospital and try it out. So I had to miss a lot of classes, but it was worth it because I was able to take what I learned in the classroom and really apply it to real world life. And I feel like by applying and by growing my company during my undergrad was where I really learned the engineering. I really learned the business and I started becoming a business owner, leader, an entrepreneur.
It's really fantastic that you look at your journey and experience that way, because as you go through university is hectic already for so many people. It's so stressful. And then to layer on top of that, a business. But as you're learning, it actually puts everything into more a relatable format for you to be like, this is why I should care about this.
Right.
Because I'll tell you, when I was in math class, I'm pretty good at math, actually. But when we had to do parabolas and things like that, I'd be like, I am never, ever going to use this in my life. I don't need to know how to build a bridge. But you, going through all your engineering classes, that was actually quite helpful to you building your technology.
Yeah, definitely gave context to why we're learning these concepts. And even sometimes I had to learn it and then I would go to my class and then I would learn it in the class and kind of already be ahead of the curve a little bit because I had to teach myself that because I was running my business and I had to do my own prototyping. Mm-hmm. So it definitely helped me for sure. And, you know, I couldn't have done it with, you know, such incredible friends that, you know, helped study with me, you know, the night before the midterm and we did assignments together. And I just had such an incredible support system around me too.
Yeah. It's great because like a support system is what keeps a lot of entrepreneurs alive. Mm-hmm. It can be a very lonely journey. As you were going through university, did you find that it was maybe a little bit lonely because you're preoccupied with building your own business? Yes, you did have your group of friends, but like your mission was different from theirs. Like what was driving you? I'm not saying your friends were party friends, but as the quintessential typical university student. You want to party on a Friday night. Well, what are you doing on a Friday
night? I was writing business plans and I was entering into every single pitch competition I could find. Mm-hmm. And I definitely realized who my real friends were. The ones who would support me and they weren't jealous, or, you know, I wouldn't be shy to tell them about my wins and to share my successes with them. And I genuinely felt like they were proud of me. And I definitely saw who the real friends were and the ones that understood why I would not go to parties or why I didn't answer their texts for hours, mm-hmm. Because I was writing business plans or entering into pitch competitions. Those were the friends that, you know, have been so close to me even till this day and are my support system that you absolutely need, because, you know, even as a CEO, being on the top, it is so lonely. And creating a company when other individuals might just be on a completely different trajectory in life is quite lonely. So, you know, definitely, you know, there's definitely misery in company. So, you know, having entrepreneur friends and people who get it, because I feel like some of my friends in university, they didn't understand the stress I was going through running your own company. Yeah. And when I started reaching out to the entrepreneur community in Hamilton as well, it definitely made me feel more confident and made me feel like I was doing the right thing. And
you're just
and that it was possible and not alone, for sure.
Yeah. I love that you said it is possible, because number one thing for this podcast is we want to have entrepreneurs, especially like yourself, that make other people know it's possible. I have three co-op students right now, and I made them, every time I have a co-op student come in, at least this year so far, I made them listen to at least one episode of the podcast and tell me what they think about it. And they're like, wow, I didn't think that could be possible.
Yeah.
Like, you know, knowing the person's background and then seeing what they've created really changes what we think is possible in the world. Yeah. Going back to what you said about, you know, who your real friends are, Simon Sinek always tells the story. At least I always see this real on Instagram. He always says that you know who your real friends are. I'm paraphrasing, I'm getting it totally wrong. But he's just like, you really know who your friends are when you can celebrate a win with them and not necessarily like celebrate like a downtime with them. Yeah. And you said it really well earlier, like misery loves company, but when it's time to celebrate your wins, it's just like, who do I tell without making it feel like I'm better than you? You should watch me, because it's not. It's just like that one win like keeps you going out of like the long moments you have in the valley.
Well, that and also for me, it was, you know, sharing that we won an award or something. For me, I don't care about the award. I care about the person that I'm helping at the end of the day. But, you know, making a LinkedIn post about it, it's so hard seeing people on LinkedIn posting about their wins and all of that. Sometimes, you know, you think that they're showboating.
Yeah.
But then for me, it was always, you know, I'm creating awareness for the disability community. Every single time I go up on stage, I do a pitch or I'm giving a talk, it's always to create awareness for people with disabilities. And I think I had to turn my mindset into I'm posting about my wins or I'm sharing it with others, not to showboat, but to create awareness for people with disabilities.
Yeah.
And I really had to focus my mindset on that, because it does feel weird, you know, to write a LinkedIn post about yourself, and it does feel weird and I hate it. But at the end of the day, I always remind myself, you know, you're getting up on that stage to create awareness for these individuals who are nonverbal, who can't advocate for themselves. You're doing this for them. Mm-hmm. So every post I make or every competition or stage that I stand on is for the community. So it was weird putting yourself out there for the sake of others. And yeah, it definitely felt weird to do. I've never done that before, but I just had to for the community and to get the product into as many hands as possible.
You are such an inspiration because one of the biggest things I struggle with is exactly that.
Mm. I mean, I feel like as women, we never like to share the wins, and we like to be more humble and reserved. So to put yourself out there is definitely feels uncomfortable sometimes.
Oh, it's so uncomfortable. So uncomfortable. I still don't do it. And I have to. I have to do it because, you know, I have to do it for my community, mm-hmm. for the entrepreneurs like yourself, mm-hmm. you know, because it's an opportunity for us to win together.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's why I'm going to do it. And maybe you can hold me to this.
I will.
I will try and post a little bit more frequently with that mindset. You know, it's not necessarily about me. It's not about necessarily showboating, but it's how do we build together?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Mindset shift.
Yeah.
This has been a part of, you know, your full university experience. What happened once you graduated?
So when I was about to graduate, my dad asked me, so Leanna, what engineering job are you applying to? And I said to him, what do you mean? I already have a job. And he was like, oh, no, that's not a job. That's just a hobby. And I mean, at that point, I won quite a few awards mm-hmm. and a lot of cash behind them. But I went out and got a job. I mean, I come from an Italian family, but a little bit of a strict Italian family. So I went and got a job, and I was doing my job and I was working on my company. And I ended up just reaching a point where I wasn't putting my full self into either, which didn't feel authentic. Mm-hmm. And I just knew that I had to choose. I was at a crossroad, and I had to choose what pathway to go towards or to continue on. And I ended up just really listening to my heart and choosing my company, which was honestly very clear because of the people that have used my product and seeing the smiles on their faces and the gratitude from moms as they watch their child write and draw for the first time. It was an easy decision to choose my company. But of course, you know, it was a risk. Entrepreneurship is risky, and starting your company is risky. And leaving that comfy 9-to-5 and steady income. And I just really had to follow my heart. And I'm so glad that I did, because we've just impacted so many people's lives. And now I get to do this full time, which has only been a year and a half. Although we've been incorporated for 6 years, I have only started working on the company full time a year and a half. And when I started working full time, that's when I recruited the team. And really, like, all of our growth has happened within the last year. And we just have such great momentum now. But I'm just so happy that my younger self made that hard decision.
Yeah. And I love it's that you younger self making a decision for your future. How do you continue to make decisions like that? Like, what, I know your heart guides you, but how do you maybe construct to say, this may be a hard decision now, but it's good for tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, the other part of decision making is listening to the heart, but also listening to your gut. Mm-hmm. And I have always listened to my gut. And when I don't, something bad ends up happening. Yeah. So that gut feeling, it's a real thing. And I've always listened to it.
And is there something that makes you think of? Like, what was the time you did not listen to your gut?
No, maybe on a higher. We won't dive into that, but
that's an important one.
It is. I mean, I feel like whenever I interview people for a position, the first 5 minutes, I know if they're a good fit or not. And one of the main questions that I ask is, how have you demonstrated compassion and empathy in your life, whether personally or professionally? Because one of our main core values is empathy. And And I want to see if they're able to do that, because for me, I really believe that you can teach people skills, mm-hmm. but you can't teach them how to empathize. You can't teach them how to engage with someone with a disability. And, you know, I just recruited co-op students this month, and we did some user testing with a family, and they had a little girl with the cerebral palsy. And I was just blown away by the compassion that my students had for this family, and they were just so sweet and so kind. And those two hires, within the first 5 minutes, I knew I was going to hire them. And that gut feeling, kind of that love at first sight, like it is real, and you do get that feeling. And yeah, so listening to the gut and listening to the heart, and specifically for our team, asking that one question in the first 5 minutes has been something that has worked out quite well.
I love it. I really do, because hiring is, like you said, it's less about skill, but more about what is this individual's core values.
And you can't teach that, and you can't mold that. It's very difficult.
No.
So.
Yeah. I love that, because especially when I hire co-op students, I actually don't ever look at their resume.
No way, really?
I pull out anywhere from like 3 to 5 random resumes and be like, I will interview all of them. And if they can't answer good questions about like, what do you want to do? What's important to you?
Right. All the questions around your core values and who they are as a person. Mm-hmm. For sure.
If they can't do that,
as long as you're coachable. And you have the right core values, I think that's like the perfect package.
100%. And I actually think it's a hiring practice that shouldn't just, you know, stay at this level, but like at every level of hiring, mm-hmm. within any company.
Yeah, any exec position. Right now we're trying to hire for a management position, and mm-hmm. and I'm still trying to find someone who shares the same core values as us. Of course, bringing in individuals with great expertise is obviously what you need to do when you reach a certain point in the company. Yes. But someone who still shares that compassion and the core values that your company lives by, mm-hmm. is so important. So that still remains a question that I ask for my co-ops and for like a potential operations manager or mm-hmm. COO, the same question to really find that out.
Yeah, because who you work with is important, especially when you're in charge. You get to decide.
Yeah, I'm just so grateful for the team that I have now, because I don't question at all that their heart really is in the mission of our company. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really why we've been so successful, because we laugh together, we cry together when we see kids using our product for the first time, and everyone's heart is just so tied to the mission that it just makes every day fun and all the wins even sweeter, and all the lows, you know, we pick ourselves, each other back up, mm-hmm. and we all motivate each other to continue, because we're, at the end of the day, we're helping someone else and we're improving their life. So it does definitely make a huge difference when you have an amazing team supporting your mission and believing in it as well. Believing in me and believing in the mission is huge to building a successful team.
Yeah. And you're doing it. When people think about building a business, obviously money is a huge component of it. And most startups in the world, you see the process of find an idea, solve a problem, pitch to investors. Mm-hmm. But also pitch competitions, but mostly investors, because that's where the money is. Right. That's how you're going to grow your business. But you took a completely different route. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you did and why. How did you raise money and why did you try to do it that way?
So entering pitch competitions was an absolute no-brainer for me, because you not only could win cash to fund and grow the business, but also to create awareness about your product and your mission and to inspire others in the community to maybe advise you or mentor you. So for me, pitching, getting up on stage came very naturally. Now I've probably gone and pitched thousands of times, but every single time I go up on stage, my legs shake, my hands shake holding the mic. But I've always told myself, be comfortable with being uncomfortable. So every single time I go up on stage, I know my body's just going to react that way, but it's okay because I'm just excited. And storytelling was really important during our pitch, and especially for our product, because it is a human problem. And one of the things that I would do immediately in my pitch to pull the judges and the audience and to really captivate them was, so I would introduce myself and then I would say, I'd like you all to mimic the motions I make with my hand. Open and close your hand, move your wrist around, wiggle your fingers. This is what it feels like to have full mobility.
Wow.
But not everyone has that. And then I would advance my next slide and talk about the problem.
That's powerful.
And in it is powerful because it makes the audience empathize with the problem and make them realize like that, oh my goodness, I do take my hand mobility for granted. Or, you know, they don't think twice about a child who can't write their name for the first time or an adult who can't paint because of their Huntington's disease. And storytelling is just so powerful in those moments to, again, captivate the audience. And I always say you want the audience to remember how they feel after your pitch. Not necessarily all the stats and the deep tech that you're explaining, but how they felt. And for me, I really try to pull on the emotions to really get them to empathize with the mission and the problem that we're addressing. Because once you get them to empathize with the problem and see the problem, then the solution is so clear to them. And that's where you really get the buy-in. And that's where, you know, you end up winning.
Or you get the cha-ching.
But yeah, and that's where...
That's where you won... How much money?
Oh my goodness, over $1 million in non-dilutive funding.
Pause. Take it in. Non-dilutive funding. For our listeners that don't know what that means, isn't in this ecosystem of all of our jargon, what does that actually mean?
That means cash that you can use towards your R&D, employee salaries, really anything to help grow and fund your business without giving a piece of the pie or a pound of flesh to maybe an investor. Mm-hmm. For me, that was the pathway that I definitely initially wanted to take. Yeah. To advance the growth of the company and still try to solve it and figure it out without having to give up that ownership quite yet.
Yeah. And why wasn't, especially early on in your journey, investing wasn't key for you?
I think it wasn't even a focus. I was just focused on getting the product out, creating our prototypes. I mean, our product is mechanical, so we didn't need too much to invest into creating the first batch of 150 and launching it. Mm-hmm. Whereas other technologies, deeper tech or, you know, therapeutics, like that obviously requires like intense investment rounds and funding. But for our product, we were lucky that we didn't need all of that money. And the non-dilutive funding that we received from pitch competitions was enough to be scrappy, to create these prototypes, to build the first 150 in my basement on my ping pong table, and then launch them to the market and sold them all, and then created the next batch. We were able to do that with the funding that we got. So
I think it's your scrappiness and the real creativity that, you know, lives in you. And I think it's sort of full circle that, you know, you're so creative in so many ways, and that is exactly what your product
you have to
gives
be scrappy
to everybody.
You have to be scrappy as an entrepreneur. Like when I first had to create my website, I paid a fellow engineering colleague of mine in a case of beer to create my website, and because I didn't have a lot of money at the time. And yeah, you definitely have to think creatively and bring people on who are there for the mission and who believe in you. That's also really important as well.
Yeah. And I mean, after $1 million, obviously with all of that, you continue to receive, you know, so much good support globally. you know, locally in so many ways. You know, Forbes 30 under 30. Congratulations. I know it's been a little bit of time now, but that's huge. I know it was a goal of mine, which I didn't meet. So super, like, to know that I'm sitting across from someone like that is, like, amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Right? And then the Muhammad Ali Award that you received about a year ago now.
Yeah.
Where you met
Shaquille O'Neal, who was also a recipient of the Humanitarian Award. And I actually brought with me a Shaq-sized version of Guided Hands, which he signed. So in comparison to our product, we can see it. This is the Shaq size, and that is for a child. There's an adult hand piece, but there's still a pretty big differentiator between the sizing. But this one, so I'll quickly share the story.
Yeah.
So I knew that he was also receiving the award. And I, within 36 hours of me getting on a flight, I thought to myself, well, wouldn't it be funny if I brought a Shaq size version to have him test out? Because they told us that all the winners were going to meet together in a room with Muhammad Ali's wife, Lonnie Ali, before we went up on stage. So mm-hmm. I thought, oh my gosh, I can meet him. I'll get him to use it. So this one took 24 hours to 3D print. Mm-hmm. And there is etching of a basketball as the handpiece and then his number. And so luckily it 3D printed okay, brought it with me on the flight. And then we found out that his private jet was late. So I wasn't, as one's private jet is always. And I wasn't going to meet him. And I thought, oh my gosh, I brought this with me and we worked so hard. Because I told my engineering students, drop everything you're doing. We are creating this. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh my gosh, now, like, I stressed them all out. Like, and now, you know, so I showed it to Lonnie Ali. And I said to her, oh, look at the Shaq size, got it, hands, isn't it funny? And she said to me, well, Leanna, after you do your speech, you should come down and show it to him. And I'm sitting right beside him. And I thought, okay, no, not in front of, like, an audience of 400 people. That's crazy. And she was like, do it. And I was like, yes, ma'am. So after my speech, I did a 5-minute speech. Everyone clapped for me. And then I stood awkwardly at the podium and I said, I have a surprise for Mr. O'Neal. My engineering team and I created a Shaq-sized version of Guided Hands, and I'd love to come down and see if it fits. And then someone handed me the handpiece, and then I walked across the stage right in between him and his mom, and I put it down, and then he put his hand on it, and then he said to me, did you invent this? And I said, yes, I did. And then I whispered to him, can you sign it? And he grabbed the Sharpie, which looked like a crayon in his hand, and he signed it for me here. And then I got up to this was in the middle of the whole event, and everyone was watching us. There was like over 400 people in the room. And then he went to shake my hand, or he actually asked me, where are you from? And then I said, Hamilton. And I hope Shaq knows where Hamilton is. I hope I put Hamilton on the map for him. But, you know, we're so proud that we're manufacturing this product in Hamilton. And, you know, so I was very proud to share that with him. And then I got up to go walk back to my seat, and I shook it, and he reached out to shake my hand, which, if anyone sees the photo online, it is like my hand looks like a toddler's hand compared to him. But that was honestly one of my favorite moments. And the best part was that my parents came with me to this award ceremony, and they had no clue that I was going to do this. So when I got back down, they were like white as ghosts. They were like, oh my God, you just did that? And it was hilarious. They must have died inside, but it was a lot of fun and definitely such a great memory.
What a moment.
It was.
What a moment. And you can memorialize it.
Yeah.
Right? Ah, oh, so cool. I mean, I have children hands. This will work very well for me. But this, oh my.
And it fit for him, which was really cool.
And your engineering students did all the work.
Yeah. 24 hours. We like whiteboarded, and we were looking at his hand size compared to a pop can, and would like use scaling factors and use a lot of what we learned in lecture to create this version, and it worked out. So, yeah.
So as we go into, you know, wrapping up this podcast, there are three questions we ask all of our guests. The first one is, what is one thing you're going to leave behind in your entrepreneurial journey?
I think one thing was really embracing failure and using it. For me, it really was an acronym for first attempt in learning, or find another important lesson. And really removing the mindset that fail is a negative word, and that word actually opens up a lot of opportunity, especially in prototyping, in business, when you're thinking of your go-to-market strategy or how to approach your customers. You're always learning. And yeah, that fail is not a negative word. That can be a positive word that can really direct you in this journey to grow and do better and to eventually help the market that you're hoping to serve.
Love it. Love it. That is actually a very good answer, because failure is a reason most people don't even start.
Yeah, or it scares them to not even start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's your biggest lesson that you've learned?
Biggest lesson is asking for help is not a weakness. Mm. Embracing that is really important. It definitely takes a village to start a company, to get the support behind you, to launch it out into the market, and again, to get back up even stronger when maybe you're knocked down. So I really had to surround myself with an amazing ecosystem of people who were smarter than me so that they could lift me up, and asking for help when I needed it, whether that be from my friends or from a mentor, anyone, because entrepreneurship is very lonely. And if you surround yourself with people who deeply care about not only your personal growth and the growth of your company, you can really make an impact and get through anything. So asking for help is definitely not a weakness.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It actually is a sign of real strength.
Yeah.
Because you're able to look in the mirror and know what you're good at and know when you need a hand.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the last one is, what's one thing you're absolutely taking into the future as you grow as an individual and as you grow your business?
I mentioned this earlier in the podcast, but definitely listening to my gut and in my heart, leading with my heart, leading with compassion and empathy, whether it be leading my team or speaking with customers. Those are definitely things that have heavily contributed to the success of the company and have led me to be on a journey to impact the lives of so many people.
Amazing. Well, Leanna, it's been such a pleasure. Such a pleasure.
Thank you.
Sitting and chatting with you and getting your perspective and hearing about your journey, because it is a unique one and you are exceptional and the product you've made is exceptional. And it's so great to like have a little bit of a laugh, you know, celebrate some things with you. And we can't wait to make sure that everyone that can use a guided hand, that needs it in their life, has one. And Guided Hands is in over 25 countries across the globe. So if you know anyone that needs a guided hand, we know we have global listeners. So visit imaginablesolutions.com and order someone you know a guided hand. It's giving season. And if you don't have someone you can get a guided hand for, you can always support a great program Leanna and her team has developed where you can contribute towards getting a guided hand to someone that could absolutely need it so they can bring creativity into their own lives. Don't forget to check out our TV episode if you haven't, to get to see guided hands in action. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and do what you do best. Take care, everyone. See you on our next episode. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We're so glad to have you as part of our Buzzworthy community as we grow our network of buzzworthy businesses. Continue to follow us on all the social media platforms at buzzworthy_pod and follow us on whatever platform you're listening to so that you can get the new episodes as soon as they're out.
This Buzzworthy podcast could not be done without our incredible team, starting with our music by Khaled Imam, our video and sound engineer, James Clark, Yvette Robichaud, our social media manager, Cesar Cardania, our brand and creative lead, and finally, your host and executive producer, Shalacy Harris. We'll see you next week.